Welcome to Your Call. Rose Aguilar is out today. I'm Angie Coiro sitting in for her. A quote online is attributed to dancer Stacey Tauscher. "We worry," she said, "about what a child will become tomorrow, yet we forget he is someone today." Throughout the U.S., there's way too much evidence that treasuring our children is mostly lip service when it comes to developing them into adults. As the new documentary Make a Circle points out, the system for early childhood education is broken. Make a Circle is a mosaic of love and frustration. It follows several Bay Area child care providers as they work to keep their doors open and advocate for better pay and benefits. It's 90 minutes of sheer beauty, the deep, patient, nurturing care of workers on the job with pre-K children, and those same people chasing the dream of basic, decent pay and health care. As one placard in the film says, imagine a child care system funded on the true cost of child care. We are so far from that. Many professionals receive low pay and few benefits. According to the film, the average pay for an early childhood educator is $13 an hour. Hundreds of thousands of providers left the profession during the pandemic, bringing many states to the brink of a child care crisis. Make a Circle premieres this Sunday, May 5th, as part of the Docklands Film Festival. It's at 3:30 p.m. at the Smith Rafael Film Center in San Rafael. We'll have more information at yourcall.org. Let's welcome Jen Bradwell and Tom Buckelhide, directors of Make a Circle. Jen has edited more than 15 feature documentaries. She taught master classes in editing at UC Berkeley's Graduate School of Journalism and UC Santa Cruz's Social Documentation Program. She says years of editing and story consulting have inspired her to direct her first feature documentary, Make a Circle. Jen, hi. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having us today.
She teamed up with Tom Buckelhide, whose numerous credits include editing, picture, and sound on Star Wars and the Black Stallion. He also mixed sound for the award-winning Amadeus and composed music for several documentaries. As with Jen, this is his directorial debut. Hi, Todd.
Hi.
It's good to have you.
Also, good to be here.
Also on the line, we have Patricia Moran. She's an early childhood care provider featured in the film. She's also an advocate and leader in the Child Care Providers United Union. After several years as a teacher, she became a coordinator at a child care development agency in Santa Clara County, then opened her own family child care facility, the Creative Learning Center. We get to know Patricia as a key member of her union's negotiating team. Patricia, with all that going on, it is amazing you have any time for us. Thank you for being here.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for have this moment. That's amazing. Thank you.
Well, it's very important. It's very important. Jen and Todd, your credentials, as we just heard, are very long and impressive, but until now they have not included directing, and this is the subject that you picked for your debut. Let's start with Jen. Why is that? Why start with this as your first director job?
Yeah, you know, I think Todd and I, both being kind of in the trenches of post-production, but working on a lot of really impactful documentaries, kind of always had in our mind, like, you know, someday we'll direct our own film, someday we'll do that. And then this subject kind of came to us and, you know, put its claws in and wouldn't let go, because we had two young kids who were in a lovely preschool, and some teachers there came to us with this question of, you know, there's of the documentaries that are out there that are, you know, about early childhood education, you know, none of them really have any teachers or teaching in it. And there's such a crisis in our field. You know, the pay is so low, the burnout is so high, people think of us as babysitters. And, you know, certainly parents even struggle to afford and find childcare in the first place. You know, we need to get a different story out into the zeitgeist about what happens in a childcare or a preschool during the day, how hard it is to sustain in this profession, and then what should we do about it? Mm-hmm. So we took a leap of faith about 5 years ago, but started to film only like a month before COVID hit.
Wow. What
really
timing.
I think that would really turn up the fire on the childcare crisis.
Yeah, definitely. In fact, Todd, Jen just said something that occurs as an undercurrent throughout the film. It keeps coming up that these are emphatically not babysitters. These are educators. But there's a lack of respect and genuinely a real, even among the good-hearted, there's a genuine misunderstanding of what these professionals are doing every day.
It's true. And what they are doing every day is invisible to most people. And that's really, that was our mission with the film, was to make it visible. And in the film, you see how professional they are, how good they are at helping kids learn how to resolve conflicts. You learn about how they help kids socialize, get along with people, create, essentially form them into really great citizens. You know, I can only wish for a citizenry that's learned all those skills at such a young age, where it becomes completely natural to resolve conflicts, you know, in a friendly fashion. And I just think it's you know, a better world is possible, and they show what it's like.
Mm-hmm. And create a love of learning that they carry with them into elementary school and beyond.
You know, there's a lot in the film that, now, I'm not a mom, but I've been around a lot of kids, and I think handling one or two kids at one time can be really exhausting. And to think of a room full of them, there's this absolutely beautiful moment where a teacher who already is working on four fronts at once has to deal with a child who threw what I think is a pencil at her. The child was frustrated and threw this. And the teacher followed her and said, you know, first, that doesn't feel good. Second, do you think I don't love you because you did that? No, I still love you very much. The patience and the intellect that are encapsulated in that moment, investing in how the child would deal with conflict and anger from that point on, is so illustrative of everything in the film, Todd.
Yeah, I know. And, it you know, Leela, that teacher is a wonderful person. So skilled, so loving, and you just said it so well, Angie. You know, she's got the patience, and she knows what the kid needs. The kid needs connection. The kid needs to trust her and to feel her love. And only with those kinds of supports can the kid really be interested in learning, be curious, feel free to explore, which is what kids do all the time. Young kids are always explorers. They're scientists. They're learning constantly. And if they don't have that connection with a trusted adult, they're going to be holding back. They're not really going to be feeling free and supported and able to learn.
Mm-hmm. Patricia, it's evident, obviously, the kids on camera are the ones that the teachers are dealing with at the moment. But there are invisible children who are waiting for a chance to get into childcare, and there are waiting lists for both public and private. How bad is that, Patricia?
Yes, it's really, really bad. It's really bad. Do you know, we had like almost 2 million of children in waiting list. In waiting list. And they're so frustrated because parents, you know, they are looking for and waiting for years. I want to share something. I want to share one example. Mm. I remember 10 years ago, a mom came to enroll her children, and she was waiting in waiting list in one of the agencies. And, you know, she was calling and calling and calling me too and say, Patricia, maybe soon I'm going to have the enrollment. One day, months ago, she called me back. Mm-hmm. Years later and say, Patricia, finally, I received a letter for the acceptance of my children for the substitute programs. But, you know, this is so frustrating for me because my son is 10 years old now. Mm-hmm. And she was waiting almost 10 years.
Wow.
And that I know this mom, she was really struggling, a single mom. And try to find the care for her son. And you know how dangerous to have, you know, these moms, they need to find a way to, you know, find the care for their children because they need to work.
Yes.
They take the children, you know, to anywhere, the friends, neighbors, and a child needs a structure, routine. A person to be, you know, supporting them in their all stage of development. That is so important.
You mentioned subsidies. Can you explain how that works, what they have to do with childcare?
Yeah. Do you know, we work with with the state, but they know the state send the money to the agencies for the subsidies programs. A subsidy program is for low-income families. Those subsidies expire slots. They pay to providers,
mm-hmm.
the care of the child, and that's, you know, the parents, they need to be in waiting list for a long time in order to have that place. The agencies, you know, they are the resources and referrals. They contact the parents or contact the provider and say, you know, I have these parents that are looking for daycare. If we have the opening, they are very welcome. But, you know, we are facing too many challenges,
mm-hmm.
because we have very low pay. And sometimes they're breaking our hearts not to accept children with an intellectual challenge, because it's not like we don't want to, it's because we don't have the accommodations. We mm-hmm. don't have the enough money to pay an extra assistant. That's the reality that the parents they're facing. And this very sad reality for us, the providers. We want to provide the care, but it's really hard.
Yeah.
Not having the money, you know, to afford to pay an assistant, because this we always give the quality care for the children.
Yeah, the statistics are really stark. So even if you are income eligible to get a state subsidy slot, you have a 1 in 7 chance of actually getting a spot in a program like Patricia's. And then, you know, 90% of the child care system, at least in the state of California, is private pay. So it's really on parents to pay the tuition. And parents commonly pay like college level tuition for early care and education for their kids. So it's a system that's, you know, very broken for parents to be able to afford and access it. And then it's a system that's very broken for the amazing people that are doing the work that, you know, are frequently working at or sometimes even below minimum wage.
Mm-hmm. Todd, one of the things we see that's kind of a shocker in the film is how far the United States is behind the rest of the first world in providing decent education for children, including early child care.
Yeah, it's I think the U.S. is behind the first world, other countries, first world, in a lot of things. You know, I think that there's been a lot of pushback against the whole idea of a public good, which is what we really need to have. You know, there's reasons you want to build a society together. There's reasons you want to be in communication with others and have the kinds of support that you need. And I think that there's just been a real concerted effort to make everything private, you know, everything privately paid, expect the churches to step in, expect, you know, philanthropists to step in for this kind of thing. And it just doesn't happen. So there's plenty of reason for people, you know, we pay taxes for roads, we pay taxes for lots of things, but do we get childcare for that, which is so necessary? No, we don't.
Yeah, the good news is that, you know, the studies show that every dollar you invest in early childhood education returns sevenfold when you look at, you know, the in increased income that the parents can earn, the income of that kid over the course of their life, better health, better public safety. Like it pays for itself many times over. And if there's one silver lining that came out of the pandemic, there's a lot more visibility on this particular issue, and a lot more energy to make changes, you know, to make this more accessible for parents, to compensate educators better. There's movements all across the country, including here in California, that we get to follow in the Make a Circle film. But I think what we really need to do is activate the parents that are affected by this issue, because for so many of them, it's this like private struggle and they're not connecting it to things like, you know, should this be a public good? Is this a voting issue? And that's definitely one of the goals of the film.
That's Jen Bradwell. She and Todd Buckelheid are directors of the new documentary Make a Circle. You can find information on that at makeacirclefilm.com. Patricia Moran is one of the educators featured in Make a Circle. And we're going to be opening the lines shortly for your questions and comments. But let's take a little more information about the film first, especially, Patricia, in your case, you have your home, you have your work. In the film, as we see you at home, your exhaustion and your determination are very clear. You end up working after a major surgery. You're back on the lines the next day. With all of that going on, why did you choose to open up your life to the cameras? Because that's an extra burden, having cameras follow you around.
You know, it's a great opportunity. It was a great opportunity to show how hard is our job and how we are very, they don't value our job. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the way to raise our voice. That's what in my first, you know, thought, it was like, no, they need to see what is going on, how we are working, how hard it is not to have a benefits, not having PTO. And that's why I opened my daycare after this big surgery. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a struggle, but at the same time, you know, that were childcare providers were facing. We are facing that situation. And providers, they are open their daycares very early in the morning, 4 o'clock. They receive children at night, weekends, because parents, they are working in different schedules. Mm-hmm. And we are support the community. We are supporting we are the big supporters of the economy of California. Because mm-hmm. those parents are working and paying taxes. Right. And they, for me to be in the, open the door for the film, it was the amazing opportunity to show our reality and the reality how, you know, child care is in crisis, how we are being through all this year and the COVID, the pandemic. It was really, really hard because we risk our lives, the lives of our families, to open our daycares.
Yeah. In fact, you see that the teachers are masked, but the children can't be. They're too young to have masks. And so you're breathing the same air as the kids during the pandemic.
Exactly. You can see in the film, one of the children, they pull my mask down and to give me a kiss.
Yeah.
How am I going to explain to a toddler saying, no, I can't give you, don't give me a kiss, or I can't hug you.
Mm.
You know, we need to think about their social emotional development, how we are going. It was really hard.
Yeah.
Because if you reject a child in that age, it's very hard for them.
Yeah.
It's an act. We want to help the children to develop empathy. We need to show the empathy too.
Yes. Yeah. Todd, forgive me if I'm taking you beyond the scope of the movie. I just wonder, as you gathered information for this, as you talked to so many people, we're referring primarily to parents, teachers, and government at this point. What we haven't talked about is people who don't have children. And I wonder if you developed a sense as you worked on this as to whether we as a people recognize the importance of early childhood education and child care. Are non-parents invested in this in a way that reflects how important it is?
I don't really know the answer to that, Angie. I would hope they would be, and I would hope they'd be more so after seeing the film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, children offer so much. I think, you know, we all leave childhood, we leave it behind, and we forget so much. But what's amazing about children is how present they are. And honestly, the teachers that we worked with in this film are equally present. You have to be real with kids. Kids have amazing BS detectors. You can't come in with a false face on. They will ignore you.
Mm-hmm.
So children have a gift of showing you what being present looks like. And it's really, I mean, be here now. You know, there's so much that people have given real thought to, and sometimes just lip service to, of, you know, how valuable it is to be present here and now. Mm-hmm. That's the best way to have communication with people, is to really bring your authentic self, be open to what others have to say, be a good listener. I mean, all those things are things that children can teach us, and many adults can't. You have to relearn it constantly, and kids offer that.
I mean, I would say for our film, you know, our goal was to be kind of a love letter to early childhood educators, and then a wake up call to everyone else, whether you have kids and you already care about this issue or you don't. One of my mottos as a storyteller is just assume no one gives an SH word. Mm-hmm. And we ask ourselves, you know, how do you hook people in? How do you make them care? How do you charm them along the way to really, you know, feeling what is so vital and urgent about this issue? So whether people care or not, you know, our hope with the film is that they come out of watching it, you know, feeling outraged and feeling hopeful, and also feeling like, my goodness, we should just be paying the people that do this work like doctors, because of the amazing benefits that they give to kids, to families, to communities, to the economy, that we want that to be, you know, like a bell that you can't unring, mm-hmm. with the storytelling.
And Jen, let me stay with you for this, because one of the things I found very impressive about the film was its balance between presenting the facts. Here's what it's like to try to organize a union. Here's what the waiting list is like. Here's what our pay is like, which is nothing. And at the same time, there are those beautiful, long, lingering shots looking at the children, functioning as children, doing what kids do. There's that delicious moment where you see a child knock something off a flat surface, and he peers down at it, and you expect him to say, oh, you know, uh-oh. And instead, he methodically knocks everything else off the table, because that's the fun part. And I really commend that balance between really spending time with the kids, because they're the whole point, and yet balancing that with the logistics of what's happening within that industry.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why the film is not 5 minutes long, and it's 89 minutes long. One thing that we really wanted to do with the film, especially because, since, you know, film is a unique storytelling medium, you know, we have picture and sound, and we have time, you know, to let things unfold. And we really wanted to take the experience of young kids seriously. Let's get down on their level. Let's be a part of their play. Let's feel their process of exploration and big feelings. And how can we use film as a medium to appreciate all of that? Because that is what it's about at the end of the day. You know, so many people talk about the issue of childcare as like, it's about parents being able to be in the workforce, or it's about kids being ready for kindergarten and beyond. And those things are true, but kids also, you know, as that quote said, you said at the beginning, like they deserve dignity now, every day. They deserve to be in a space where they can learn and be supported and be safe. You know, there's a basic humanity thing that I think we're frequently missing when it comes to this issue. And that's, you know, one of the reasons that we made the film.
We're going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'd love to integrate your thoughts into the show. Do you work in early childhood education? And if so, what resources do you need, either for yourself or for your classroom? How are you making that work? Maybe you've left the field because of the low pay or the lack of benefits. We want to hear from you, too. If you're a parent, what is it like for you trying to navigate childcare? How do you balance the support you need and the desire to support childcare workers? So call and talk to our panel, or you can email us. Our phone lines are open at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255, or you can email us, yourcall@kalw.org, yourcall@kalw.org. Either way, we want you to be the part of the second half of our show. Taking this break and coming right back, I'm Angie Cuero in for Rose Aguilar. This is Your Call. We're talking about the film Make a Circle. The documentary premieres this weekend at the Smith Rafael Film Center in San Rafael as part of the Docklands Film Festival. Jen Bradwell and Todd Buckelhide are first-time directors of this new documentary. Patricia Moran is one of the educators featured in the film. She runs Creative Learning Center Childcare, and she's a negotiator for Child Care Providers United Union. Patricia, let's talk about that, because as we watch the progression through the film, there's that highlight where we see the governor sign into effect the fact that these teachers can start to unionize, that educators can start to unionize, and that's a big win. And then we see the state, represented by the governor, so basically the same people, playing hardball, you know, right up to the last minute in coming through with a semi-decent pay boost and an open road to benefits. And that, to me, really captures the dichotomy between how we say we value teachers and what our government actually does. That was a real roller coaster ride for you.
Yes. You know, it was, like you say, we want to have the right to have a union. It was a fight for 20 years. Mm. But unfortunately, when we started the negotiations, when we already had that seat at the table that we were so happy to have that, we face another reality. We need to start, you know, fighting, really fighting for our rights, for our benefits, because all the time it was rejected. When it was the COVID, the pandemic, they reject our necessity. After too many negotiations, we want something to help us, but it wasn't enough. It was the same thing with the first negotiation. At the last minute, they keep us at the last minute. They could say, I remember we were up all night, back and forth to the Zoom meetings with the state. Mm. I remember really well how hard it was at 2 o'clock, two o'clock in the morning. You know, back to the, you know, they told us, you know, we are not ready. We'll see you at 8 o'clock in the morning. Mm. And I have to be awake at 4 o'clock in the morning. I remember I said, how I'm going to sleep. Maybe I'm not going to sleep tonight. And back to 8 o'clock in the morning to waiting for the results, to the answer, our petitions. And they say, no, we are not ready until the afternoon. Do you know, they were keeping us in that stress. But one of the things we learned, that we are very strong. Child care providers, we are very strong. It doesn't matter how many hours, how many times they're going to reject our proposals, we are going to continue fighting. Because the only way we can win is continue fighting and say, no, you know, this is our proposal, and also that's what we need. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we opened the door for some benefits, but it's not enough, because we are facing the challenge to we are going to pay our responsibilities at the end of the month, every month. Mm-hmm. A lot of childcare providers, they are closing doors. They are closing doors forever. And one of the things I like to comment, it was make me really frustrated when there was the pandemic. They told us we were essential because we were all taking care of the children. School were closed, centers were closed. We were providing all the care. And after, when we were in the first negotiation, okay, you were essential, but not anymore. Mm. How are they going to change it? They turn us invisible, and that's not the right. It's not okay. That's where we keep fighting and say, no, we are not invisible. We are doing the job. to protect these children. We are doing the job for low-income families and for the children in California, for the future of the California. Because we are taking care of children from 0 to 5 until 13 years old. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, is very extended service for these children.
Yeah. Jen, to pick up on something Patricia just said, it was such a fight to do this, and the state was playing hardball. There's a growing impression throughout the film that no matter how bad this gets, the child care professionals are not going to walk out on the job. There's not going to be a strike. There's not going to be a fine. You don't pay us. We don't take care of the kids. And that's understandable and admirable, and yet it is a vulnerability in negotiations. And I wonder if when putting the film together, you talked to anyone who so much as brought up the idea of a strike.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it was really, really difficult for them to consider that because they know how much that would impact the families of their child carers. You know, these are folks who often live, you know, they're low wage earners living hand to mouth, sometimes multiple families in a household, like to threaten to cut off their income stream because their childcare closed. That was a really, really hard thing to consider. However, what we do get to follow in the film is action after action, you know, culminating in about 4,000 providers that descended on Sacramento last year. You know, in this real show of force to say, you know, here we are and we're valuable and you need us and you need to listen to us and you need to give us what you need. That was a very effective strategy. And so they want to avoid a strike at any cost. It's really extraordinary and superhuman for us to witness Patricia and providers like her who, you know, are already working like 60 to 80 hour weeks in their job and then doing all this organizing and activism on top of that. You know, we started this project like not understanding how, you know, like any early educator just like gets through the day with the group full of small children. And I have to say, like, I still don't get it. All I know is that I want to support, you know, the people that are called to do this work even more.
Todd, we've alluded to the cost of undervaluing teachers to the point that they leave the business, or they leave at least the early child care industry. And can you tell us the story of Dan? Dan was unusual in one sense in that we're seeing a male in this position because we saw almost all women. But let's talk about the choices that he had to make toward the end there.
Yeah, I think it really, really ate at him. You know, he had 20 some years of experience in the early child care, early childhood education field. He was a teacher in Marin for a long time, and then he moved to the center that our kids were at. And, you know, our early impressions of Dan are that he's an extraordinary person. It is unusual to have a man in that profession. It's too bad that it is, and it's one of the reasons that we wanted to have Dan in the film is because he is an exemplar of a really great teacher. He's empathetic, he's careful, he's very, very skilled, very, very calm. He helps these kids, and he cares about them. And he was struggling. He has a child. He doesn't make enough money to support his family doing that work. And so he makes the very painful choice to get his credentials so that he can teach elementary school grades, and he moves on. It hurts him. It hurts everybody at the school that he leaves, but it was necessary for his survival and his family's survival. It's an example of what happens for so many of these folks. They just are not, there's not support that there should be.
This work has a 40% turnover rate.
Wow.
So every year, 4 out of 10 people in the profession leave, and it's the pay.
Yeah.
You know, even among you know, it was a major win for, you know, childcare providers like Patricia to be unionized, to have a seat at the table. You know, they have been negotiating for higher pay and benefits since 2020, and I know they're going to keep doing that. But, you know, still what they're being paid is about a quarter of the cost of, like, the real cost of care. And what that means is that most of them are not paying themselves a salary at all. And of the ones that do, about 25%, you know, are paying themselves less than $10 an hour.
Yeah. Charlotte was a real, that was an illuminating story in that she's running this childcare, and she says she's, when you break it down, she's making $7 or $8 an hour. She could do better at McDonald's.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So we do get to, you know, profile a lot of really dedicated people like Patricia and Charlotte, in the film, who they are going to stick it out no matter what. They're so dedicated. It's really against the odds. But for every one of them, you know, there's a lot of really talented people that are leaving the field for work that is less meaningful to them.
What was that comment? It's failing my memory right now. What was that comment that Dan got when he went in for an interview with someone to move up into beyond preschool education? And the interviewer said something to the effect that, you know, now you're getting into real teaching. What was that?
Yeah. He said, what is all that that you say you're a teacher, but, you know, what's going to happen when you go and try to teach in real school?
Ouch.
Chilling.
Yeah. It's such a dig. And definitely one of the goals of the film is to bust the myth that, you know, quote, real learning starts when you're sitting at a desk in kindergarten. You know, we want to show what does learning look like for babies and for toddlers, because learning doesn't start in kindergarten. It starts, you know, really in the womb and day one. And I think it's hard for us to tease apart, you know, care versus education. You know, we think of like daycare and preschool, and really for this age group, it's kind of all one and the same thing. You can't learn unless you are taken care of, unless you're having your needs met and you have a relationship with your caregiver. You know, when those needs are met, then you feel safe to explore and learn and grow. And so we need to have like a different narrative about what education looks like for young kids. And I think when we do that, then we're going to more properly value it.
Well, Patricia, what is it like to have to constantly remind people you're not a babysitter, you are a professional, you are an educator? I mean, that's got to be an endless job, too, to keep telling people that until they get it.
Oh, yeah, it's very frustrating. The first time I hear someone told me, but the only thing the childcare providers are doing is changing diapers. I say, no, just a second. We are early educators. We have a BA, and I have my BA in child development. Most of the providers, they have the AA or BA in trainings and classes. And it's really, really frustrating, but, you know, we need to educate people. That's why this film is, you know, it's going to educate people to see the difference, how we are working, how we are doing. I remember once when I went to pick up a child for a school age to the school, the teacher told the child, oh, here's your babysitter is waiting for you.
That must feel ridiculously bad.
But, you know, with all the respect, I told her, I'm not his babysitter. He is in my center, and I'm early educator. And, you know, I'm doing the service for the parents. They can come and pick him up. Also, I have my credential for director. You know, it's education. Educate people. And not only, you know, we faced that situation and when we had our bargaining, at the bargaining team, our negotiations, we are educated.
I would also add that people like Patricia are family therapists as well. They are chefs. They are nurses. They are entrepreneurs. It's a lot to do justice to.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, they're janitors. We see them cleaning up and doing the dishes. I mean, they're doing everything.
Everything.
But Tracy, I want to stay with you because of your own story. It was good to get to know something about you as a person. And you share about how your father's work and life, he was a statesman. He was an indigenous rights activist in Bolivia. And you saw firsthand as a child how important that kind of work is, but also how dangerous it was. And tell me what that has to do with the kind of person you've turned out to be.
Yeah, you know, my father was a great example for me not to give up, because I saw him fighting for the indigenous rights. You know, he fought for the right to the indigenous can vote. Mm-hmm. The mines came back to my country, because it was hands they are not doing well with all the miners, and all, you know, the land. And because of that, he got a lot of people that he didn't like him. Mm-hmm. And he was so persecuted. He was, you know, tortured. I remember my dad was coming and taking from my home, you know, beating him. And I was like 5 or 6 years old. Also, you know, I remember my mom. She was so worried, crying, because my dad was tortured. They forced him to drink, you know, the oil from the car. It's the oil they already used. It was mm-hmm. black. And almost destroyed his stomach. But he was fighting. He was keep fighting. He was exiled. We were exiled with him too, my family, mm-hmm. too many times. But one of the things, you know, always told me, because he got a very high position, political position in my country. First, he was a leader, union leader. After that, he was secretary of state in my country. And also, he always told us, justice. If you're going to fight for something, is for justice, not only for you, mm-hmm. for people around you. And he was so strong. And that's not keep me, sometimes I was, you know, feeling sad, feeling so frustrated, but I'll always remember his, you know, how he was. And that is a big inspiration for me.
Yeah, you're definitely his daughter. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Todd, I want to ask you about one of the things it's not left hanging in the film. We see Ann Bauer, who directs the All People School in Berkeley. She's very glad for the union workers when they do get some breaks, but she points out that most child care providers aren't unionized, and she's pressuring Berkeley lawmakers for municipal funding. And the last we see in the film is that the city kind of pushed that aside. The city's not dealing with that. Has anything changed since then for Ann and for Berkeley?
No. No. Ann is, she's a dedicated teacher and director of the school. She's doing what she can with what she has. You know, she doesn't want to raise tuition rates there because it's already very expensive mm-hmm. for parents. But she and her outgoing owner of the school, Susan, have prioritized the teachers the whole time that they've been there, which is over 20 years. And so all the money that comes in, that, you know, they have to pay rent, they have to pay utilities and stuff, but they prioritize the teachers' pay, teachers' professional development, you know, break time for the teachers, meeting time for the teachers. I mean, these are professionals. Anne knows that. Her whole life as a director of that school has been about helping them see themselves as professionals and to have the kinds of flexibility that they need to develop their practice such that they are the best teachers they can be. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, she has to work within what there is. The city has not been able to help. You know, it is a national problem. It's local, it's state, and it's national. And it's just that's the situation. It's 90% of care in California is that model.
And there's been some federal funding in the last 2 years, you know, that has come in to help not only centers like Patricia's, but also private pay preschools as well, that really, you know, helped, you know, prevent even more people from leaving the field, allowed, you know, some places to keep their doors open instead of closing. But those have been Band-Aids, and we need to have a bigger reckoning around, you know, this is a public good that we need to fund seriously. Mm-hmm.
Jen, let me stay with you because I was curious about the artistic and, well, to say documentary choice, not to talk to any of the legislators who we know are turning down. We know that the city of Berkeley has turned this away. We know that, you know, the state had to be fought with bitterly to get any kind of progress. But you chose not to actually show any of the legislators who might have said, well, here's why we can't do that right now. And I'm wondering about that choice.
Yeah. Our film unabashedly puts early educator voices first. We feel that it's their story. We want to showcase their skill, the impact that they have, and their ideas and their action about how to fix the broken system. So we need to have much more storytelling around this subject matter. But that was definitely the focus of our film. Early educator voices are elevated.
I mean, through the pandemic, there was headline after headline, you know, childcare in crisis, childcare deserts developing all over the U.S. But all of those articles, I mean, maybe with a few exceptions, in general, they foreground pretty much the government's role or lack of a role in solving it, right? So the legislators have plenty of exposure. What has not been exposed until our film is, you know, what it's like on the ground, what it's like for these educators, what it's like for the kids and the parents. You know, it's mm-hmm. We were there to kind of fill the role that has been missing for quite a while. That visibility. What does it look like? You know, what is the value here?
Give us an image of what we're fighting for.
Yeah.
Patricia, can you talk about what your work would look like if you did have adequate funding? What would you do with decent money coming in?
Oh, with the decent money? First of all, I can expand a little bit more because I have family childcare in my home. I put that at the end of the, because I didn't know how hard it was, you know, this to have a family childcare. First, I was so enthusiastic that I put it, oh, it's going to be a center. Someday I'm going to have a center. But when I realized the reality, I said, no, I'm going to keep my family childcare, you know, and the name is going to be still there, center. But one of the things, you know, if I have more money, I can hire more assistants. I can have children with intellectual challenges that I want because one of my emphasis in my BA is inclusion. I really like to work with those children, but unfortunately, I can't afford it. I can, you know, have the accommodations in my house, in my daycare for those families. It will be nice. I can have, right now I'm struggling. I put it, you know, the most organic food I can have for the children. Mm-hmm. And I can provide better quality of food because sometimes I have to think twice. It's so expensive. Feeding one or two kids, you know, is completely different to have 10 or 12 and feeding, you know, four times a day because it's not only breakfast, it's a snack, lunch, it's not a snack, it's sometimes dinner. You know, it depends the parents, how and what time they're coming to pick them up.
Right.
Those, you know, it's going to be completely different, and also I'm gonna have the peace of mind to make my payments, not struggling. Do you know how I'm gonna pay this month? I'm gonna use my credit card for this, so I'm gonna use it, always be in debt, you know, depth all the time, it's not a happy moment for me. And, you know, at least I can have vacation once.
Yes.
At least 1 week. I never took vacations. Wow. Always when I traveled in other places, as you know, for a family emergency, my mom passed away, my father-in-law, but not like, okay, I'm going to Hawaii.
Yes.
Relax. No. I can't afford it. It's really hard.
That's so basic. It's so basic.
When you ask early educators what they would do with more money, this is frequently the first response. I would make my school even better than it is. I would pay my assistants more. I would do even more for my kids. And, you know, I think it's extraordinary that, you know, these are the people who are doing this work, who also need to be able to retire with dignity, who also deserve to have time off when they're sick. It's one of those things that makes me want a primal scream, but instead we made a film.
You made a great film, and I'm not surprised listening to Patrizia's list that her own vacation came at the very end. That's exactly what we're seeing through the film, is that level of dedication. Very quickly, we have less than a minute left. Todd, I would like you to tell people, if they can't make it to the Smith Raphael this weekend, what are the chances they can see this film elsewhere?
I think the chances are good, but it's completely unknown at this point. This is our world premiere, and you know, depending on how much publicity we get and how much the word spreads that this is a good film worth putting on, that's what will determine it. So
we'll be going to more film festivals in the coming months. We'll be doing a lot of special screenings over the summer for legislators at conferences, communities that want to show the film. And probably in about a year, we'll, you know, be broadcast and streaming.
Love to see that. You can find information on that at makeacirclefilm.com. You've been listening to Jen Bradwell, Todd Buckelhide, and Patrizia Moran talking about the film Make a Circle. To listen to our past shows or to sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. You can find us too on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter or X, Your Call Radio. Savannah Harriman-Pote helped to produce today's show. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Thank you for joining us. I'm Angie Coiro, in for Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.